Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
As far as I can tell, we made it out of game one without any suspicious Chris Paul behavior.
Yes.
We also made it through game one with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And the results, well, they still tilt heavily in favor of Phoenix. Jan Angle Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, hanging out with us today. You know him as the co-host of Sports Nation, SportsCenter on Snapchat, and a number of other things around here at the company. Trev, what's going on, man?
Man, it's just good to be here, right? Like, I think I went out the gate with the Suns and Six mentality as we got into last night, and I don't know if I'm ready to shorten the series, but daggone, like, Chris Paul is certainly making the case for all the storylines for MVP and all that fun stuff. Overall, though, it was a whirlwind of emotion, at least from watching Giannis come out there, seeing him hoop, it kind of drop off the cliff, and we also saw just the emergence of Chris Paul and that storyline really taking hold as far as the series goes.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it began. We came into the series really with two things in mind that we were looking for that everyone could focus on, because, quite frankly, these are two teams that have not won titles in a good long time here or ever, and teams that have no one on the court with them with any NBA Finals experience save for Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder, baby.
Since we weren't going to do 3 hours of Jay Crowder legacy radio, we moved on to Chris Paul, tried to figure out his legacy thing, and then Giannis Antetokounmpo from last night. Going out there, went from doubtful in the morning to questionable in the middle of the day to playing in the damn game by the time we hit tip-off here. So, Trev, we know Giannis was coming back off that hyperextended left knee. He goes out there, gives them 35 quality minutes in this game, and from where I was sitting, looked explosive. Way more explosive than he had any right being, knowing what we saw just a week ago from him. So, does this change any of what you thought? You and I were both Suns in a good long series in this game. Has any of what we saw from Giannis last night changed that?
No, it doesn't change anything, but I was pleasantly surprised by how quickly he bounced back. I was listening to Kevin Arnovitz on ESPN Daily with Pablo Torre, a guy that is much smarter than me when it comes to this basketball stuff, and I'm not afraid to admit it. He actually did a wonderful job explaining one of the many superpowers of Giannis Antetokounmpo is his incredibly fast recovery time. And so it wasn't a matter of them just injecting something and he didn't feel it. Now that may be a part of the equation, but we don't necessarily know that. Regardless, Giannis is a guy that heals very quickly, and it showed in his explosiveness right off the rip, right? That baseline move that was going viral where he pulled it back, did a quick little hesitation. He doesn't have much in the package, but he showed a little something. Big body got around the corner, and he was able to throw it down. So that's just one of those things that shows you he may have a little something, and we'll see how it progresses over the course of a long series that we both perceive it to be.
Time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, and I'm with you, but I think if you're looking for best case, and I said Suns in seven, I figured at some point along the way, Giannis coming back was going to cost them a game, having to just reintegrate him into the lineup, because I didn't count on being able to see as much as we did there. Like, in addition to him being able to heal at the rate that he did, I think just as much, Trev, you know this, former Harvard running back, you're like, coming back from an injury is such a mental thing, and for him to go out there and be flying around, I mean, we put his block, his rundown, chase down block, up next to LeBron bleeping James
immediately
from that finals. Immediately. And by the way, due to merit, like, it merited that. And so seeing him take off and do the things he was doing in that game made me kind of upgrade in my mind. Okay, the things that we saw not work in game one for Milwaukee, they seem largely structural, because if you're going to get Giannis out there at full speed, yeah, everyone else kind of had to adjust their game having him back out there, but now at least they know, all right, we can count on a fair amount from this guy, so we can take the training wheels off.
When it comes to incorporating Giannis into the offense, it is get him the ball and let him work, right? Like, so that is a spot where, look, let him just clear out the paint and allow him to get to the rim. So that's one of those ones that efficiently works into your offense, whatever that offensive scheme may be. The issue for me for him is going to be the wind thing, because if you take 48 hours from the gym, if you take 48 hours away from playing a strenuous sport like basketball, that's the part that's going to take a little bit to catch up. And how much time can you afford in a series that can be over before you know it for Giannis to get his legs underneath him from an exhaustion standpoint, right?
Yeah, I think that's a factor in all of it, but I think the bigger factor is what you mentioned here is, what is Giannis's game? Give him the ball, clear out, and let him go do big man things.
Right.
Like, he is a big person who moves far better than one should in that spot. I think the adjustment, though, has to come from how everyone else works with and around that, because Giannis, hopefully with that wind, is only going to play more minutes for you in these games, which means, hey, Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, we're going to need a little bit more. Jrue Holiday production overall, Middleton efficiency, but the number that is glaring to me that speaks to the biggest difference between the rest of that group and what they were without Giannis to where they were now was the disparity in free throws. Milwaukee had 9 made free throws on 16 attempts during that game. Devin Booker made 10 free throws on his own. Like, that's just a difference in the overall level of aggressiveness. And what did we say coming out of the Milwaukee Bucks Eastern Conference Finals series? That was the difference in games 5 and 6 for Jrue and Middleton.
Yeah, Jrue has a tendency to lay out of his aggression when he knows Giannis is on the court. Right, there's a factor there where he goes into pure point guard mode when he knows he's not necessarily having the offensive responsibility when Giannis is off the floor. So that it's got to be a give and take for Jrue Holiday, in which you have to pick your spots to be aggressive. It doesn't have to be lay out completely. Allow Giannis to work, facilitate for him as much as you can, allow Chris Middleton to be a little bit more efficient as you need him to be. But that doesn't mean that you can't go out and assert yourself within that offense at the same time. There has to be a balance struck there for that Milwaukee team.
And I think that's going to be the difference, because defensively we can have a whole other conversation about what the Bucks need to do coming out of this first game here, the adjustments. And we know that's been like the number one word cloud association for this playoff run for Milwaukee has been adjustments and Coach Bud. Like, we just put them side by side and kind of lather, rinse, repeat throughout every round of the playoffs where they still keep winning. And you could say it's in spite of the coach or not, but there's structural things that have to happen there. I think it's got to be mentality things on the other side. And again, because Giannis was able to give you so much so soon in this series, sooner than we expected, everyone gets to make that adjustment coming off game one now. Instead of, all right, maybe we chalk game one up to, yeah, you know, Phoenix is a good team that's got home court advantage, to now going to game two, all right, we got that all out of the way in that one. Now let's see if we can go steal one on the road. This was Giannis Antetokounmpo after the game talking about all the treatment that he had done, the rounds and rounds of treatment leading up to game one in the NBA Finals.
From my treatment, from lifting, from getting on the court, pool sessions, you know, keeping my foot elevated, you know, like 24 hours a day. Obviously, it wasn't easy, but you know, I was willing to do it, and I think, you know, the medical staff had a great program for me that I was able to, you know, do what I have to do to get, you know, stay in shape and at the same time recover and, you know, not have a lot of swelling in my knee. And, you know, I was declared me to play. I felt good. My knee, didn't feel no pain. The swelling was down, so I was like, okay, good to go.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And Trev, that probably turns into the biggest what to watch for in between these two games. Now, game two coming up on Thursday is, all right, how does it react to 35 minutes in a highly competitive NBA Finals game one?
Yeah, you were able to lay off and really sort of just focus on getting the knee right. And now it's in the mode of, look, now you're going to push it on every occasion possible. They are going to push Giannis because they need to push Giannis in order to just extend this series. And so that's where the fatigue works back into the conversation. That's where the management of how can we incorporate Brook Lopez, how can we incorporate Bobby Portis into this lineup to get the most not only out of those two, but out of Giannis. Because while you don't want to limit his role and take him off the court for the sake of just getting those guys minutes, there's a balance there to strike between making sure you get the very most out of him and still utilizing what you found in Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez in the last series.
Exactly, and it's kind of that thing of what you found versus what you trust, because now we're in a point where this is the pressure breaks pipes, and I need to know which pipes are going to hold. So let's stick with that here, because coming up next, we got one game sample size of the finals. We mentioned two teams in uncharted territory with a lot of players who do not have experience on this stage. So what did we see in game one that we think we can trust heading into the rest of the series? We'll get to that, and we'll show you where the trust issues started on this very show next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
So yesterday on this show, as we often do as we lead up to games in the NBA Finals that are going to be on ESPN Radio, whose coverage you can hear from some of our great announcers, we got a chance to talk to one here who's pretty defiant in the face of some uncertainty heading into game one of the NBA Finals. Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And a reminder, you can catch Game 2 Thursday as Devin Booker and the Suns host Chris Middleton and the Bucks, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. Mike Golic Jr. alongside Trevor Scales here on ESPN Radio. And do we have this sound right here? Because yesterday, John Barry, our great ESPN NBA analyst, came on to talk about the beginning of this game. And I asked him about, you know, the concept of how this team adjusts, if Giannis is on the court, if Giannis is off the court, the changes they have to get made, as we were uncertain of his status still at that point. It was looking like it was going to be a game-time decision. And John Barry comes on this show, and he goes, come on, Mike, this is all fluff. There's no way he's playing out here. They're doing this as a smokescreen here. We love JB around here, but I was genuinely caught off guard at just how sure he was of that. And I was like, all right, he's our NBA analyst. I'm going to take his word for it here. After I leave the show, I see that, all right, Giannis is going to go ahead and play in this game. And you know what? I got to give a shout-out to John Barry, because the make good on the back end of this broadcast, it was him, Mark Kestisher, and Doris Burke on ESPN Radio for the call. And Stan Gold Jr. got a little love at the end of this one.
Great sign tonight he played. I can't believe that he was out here. So my apologies to Mike Golic and Shanae that I said there's no chance he's playing tonight. I was totally wrong. I will admit it.
That is a man that I could appreciate there, Trev. Walked right up and owned it in the face of that moment. Because Lord knows I have been loudly wrong on this show many times. So
company. Oh, my God. Who among us has not been loudly wrong about something that we are passionate about? But, like, yeah, shouts to JB for coming forward and claiming it and owning it. Like, we need more of that just on a general basis. You can go ahead and just say, hey, guys, I was wrong. I was loud and wrong. We could just own it, lean into it. Ain't nothing wrong with it, right?
And that's why I can trust John Barry, our Fair. NBA analyst, because I know he's going to own up to it. Like, I can't trust at Jeff in Phoenix on Twitter, who says, you're full of bleep, Mike. The Suns beat the Bucks, and we'll do it again next game. The Suns own the Bucks. You should know that, but you don't watch Suns games, and you're going to tell us the Bucks are back. Suns in five. I can't trust Jeff because clearly he doesn't listen, because we've both picked the Suns to win this series.
Correct. And Jeff is probably going to adjust that count the more games this ends up going. Like, he's only going to come back and say Suns in six, Suns in seven eventually. That's what it's going to be.
I was going to say, Suns in four guy has the market cornered already. So we've already done that one here. But it does bring us to the larger point of what we can trust from this series. So we're one game into this now, Trev, in the NBA Finals. The Suns do have a 1-0 lead here. And I want to just kind of take the temperature on some things that we saw in game one and see what we're willing to buy into going forward. Because Chris Paul, his legacy, all these things that, quite frankly, I think are a little bit overblown, are on the line heading into this series. He came out and continued to be on the scorching pace that he was in game six of the last series for the Phoenix Suns. So, Trev, when you look at the Chris Paul shooting tour de force that's going on right now here, what he's been able to do, over 70 points in the last two games now, including game one, are you buying that as something we can trust heading through the rest of the series?
I'm not entirely certain we'll get that level of offensive efficiency and production out of that specific position because of what Chris Paul primarily tends to do. Like, he's not the guy that is going to go out there with the intent of scoring 30-plus every single night. He's there to create with in the realm of the offense, and if that presents the opportunity for itself for him to go out and get these buckets, he'll do it, but he's not going to rely on that as part of it. We are there to see Devin Booker do that sort of consistent role, and it's not that CP3 isn't capable of it. Now, I'm done doubting the idea of 36-year-old getting out there and getting
after it. I can say we're good on that front.
Cool on the idea of doubting him, but like, I don't think he feels the need to do so, and that's where that falls short for me, is being a legitimate thing we'll see game in and game out.
I'm with you, and I think I trust Chris Paul to go out and orchestrate the way that he did. But if he scores the way he has in the last two games through the NBA Finals, the rest of these games here, and I think this could be a long series, we're talking about like the greatest NBA Finals performance ever by a single player.
Correct.
So I'm going to stop short of just that here. Now, Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, we're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. What about the free throw disparity here? I said before, the Bucks, 9 made free throws on 16 attempts last night. The Phoenix Suns, efficient, 25 of 26, but Devin Booker alone, more made free throws than the Milwaukee Bucks. Do you trust this pattern to
hold? Are we trying to define it as like the chasm between them, or is it like of those numbers themselves?
I think the disparity of attempts, disparity of getting to the line in this series.
I don't think that disparity is going to maintain. I think Milwaukee has learned that they need to attack the basket a little bit more, and knowing that Drew Holiday wasn't aggressive offensively the way that they need him to be, not necessarily getting more shots up from a point-blank period standpoint, but he needs to just find his shots to get into the paint, to get those easy attempts, and yeah, they're probably going to continue to get more and more chances of Giannis at the line just because of the structure and how you strategize against a player like that. You try to prevent him getting the easy buckets by hacking him, sending him to the line, and hopefully the countdown takes over, gets in his head, and he misses a couple of them.
Yeah, that's what you're buying on that end of thing. The thing I am very curious about to that free throw disparity is also, all right, as we talk about fouls, being aggressive, going to the basket, because I'm with you, I think that's the biggest and easiest adjustment for Milwaukee from game one to game two. They're going to tinker with big or small in the lineup. They're going to tinker with some of those things defensively, coverage-wise, but offensively, going at them, I wonder how that jives with also, all right, you also need to attack DeAndre Ayton at some point in that regard. Try and see if you can get him in some foul trouble. Use those big bodies that you've got there. Because we quietly saw last night Brook Lopez get suckered back into being the Brook Lopez outside, being Splash Mountain like we'd seen, and not the player that had gone inside and helped terrorize the Hawks in the last series.
God,
for them.
He did. I haven't seen him.
I didn't
reach
mean to, yeah.
It's okay.
I realize
okay.
That's kind of foul of me to bring up. I apologize.
I recognize it. I can understand it. And we move on. Right, but like Brook Lopez was showing a level of tenacity down in the paint that like I hadn't seen from him in quite some time. Like I had seen that Brook Lopez is Brooklyn when he was the leading scorer for the franchise. He was cocking back and throwing down alley-oops that didn't seem normal for him. And if you can get somewhere close to that from Brook Lopez, as far as just getting him down in the paint and trying to get shots up like that, to your point, you have the depth at the big position that Phoenix doesn't. You're able to run a lot of people at DeAndre Ayton, force him to defend, good, not great defender, and get him in foul trouble potentially. So that is another key to kind of narrowing this gap.
That being said, I trust DeAndre Ayton and what we saw from him, not only offensively, but going down just one board shy of a 2020 game would have been the first, I think, since Shaq to do that in the NBA Finals. So, again, elite territory there. But this is a guy, the only time I remember Atlanta having success against him is exactly what you talked about. Had to be a group effort. You had to attack him with more bodies. Now, Milwaukee may have better personnel to that end, but at this point, I just don't see how I could, in good conscience, trust anything other than what my eyes have told me this postseason. Whether it was Anthony Davis, albeit injured, whether it was the MVP in Nikola Jokic, or whether it was that group, that committee from the Atlanta Hawks here, DeAndre Ayton's answered the bell, so I trust that dude implicitly.
And also offensively, dude's shooting 70% from the field during the playoffs. Like, that is an unbelievable number, and he just knows where to go. He works super well with that pick and roll with Chris Paul, who is obviously making the right decision just about time that he does, and just puts DeAndre in a position to succeed and get his numbers offensively, and like you said, just putting up what he needs to and doing his assignment on the defensive end of the floor.
We'll get to the real trust issues in this series in a little bit, because it has a name, and its name is Mike Budenholzer. Like, that seems to be where we're at. And I know I've heard this from Jason Fitz. Have we gone too far in this? We'll talk a lot about that, because part of last night was Bud listening to what everyone had said and it going horribly, horribly wrong. But coming up next, speaking of something that's gone wrong, we have seen the conversation around the Olympics take a decidedly different turn in the last week. We'll give you the latest on what's happened with Sha'Carri Richardson next after this word from Indeed. Now, the good news is, guys, your business doubled. Happy for you. It's awesome. You're crushing it. Even better news, Indeed can help you hire the right people to keep crushing it without the wait times of the typical recruiting process. That's because Indeed has a great hiring platform where you can make calls, schedule virtual interviews, and talk to candidates over video right from your easy-to-use employer dashboard. It's just another reason that Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Find your next great hire at Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Janae Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae Golick Jr., the podcast.
We've gotten another update, the latest news from yesterday about Sha'Carri Richardson, the Olympic hopeful that was for the American track and field team here, and how this conversation has gotten bigger and how we need to kind of remember the scope of what we're dealing with here. Chin Angle Jr. on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat insurance. Visit progressive.com. Why Sha'Carri Richardson wasn't selected for the 4x100-meter relay team for the U.S. Olympic team. I want to get to that, but Trevor Scales admitted something to me during this last break that I wasn't prepared for. I hadn't met someone like you in the wild yet here, and so I have questions. I was shocked when I went to the mall like 2 months ago for the first time post-pandemic. When I looked around, I was getting my screen fixed at the Apple store, and I looked around, and the sheer volume of young people wearing Crocs at the mall as a fashion statement was staggering. And now I walk into the studio here, Trevor Scales, who you guys see on Sports Nation, usually always rocking great shoes on ESPN Plus, rocking Crocs in studio. So how do we come to this, Trev? How do we get to the Crocs?
It's more of out of an efficiency. It is a matter of me having a shoe that I need to slip on, take out the pup. Young Jasper, 2 years old, French Bulldog, doesn't need much time outside, so we're not out there for long walks by any stretch of the imagination.
Yep.
But he needs to go out every so often. So we know we have to have something that we can slip on, get out, do his business, and we come back inside. There's also the value here in comfort. I was not necessarily a believer in these shoes are that much more comfortable than the pair of Cortezes that I brought with me today. Like, I truly believe that, like, there is a sort of peak in comfort that you're going to get when you put on a pair of shoes, and it's not going to exceed
yep.
that. I will admit, the Crocs proved me wrong on that. Like,
wow.
I'm not just, like, all in on the idea of them being a fashion statement. Your boy ain't going to put them little, what are they called, giblets on the mugs?
I am, again, this is a spot. Crocs and TikTok are where I have, like, aged a certain point here. Billy, our producer, is one of our resident young people on the show. Billy, are they called giblets?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, word. Right. Appreciate that confirmation. So I feel younger again. Great. Also, I'm not in on them, right? Like, I can't go that far.
Now that I've established what they are, damn these giblets to hell.
Not doing it, right? Like, and there's no shade. I just know what I have them for. I got a nice little black and tie-dye joint. Like, it's one that I can put on with anything, and you're not going to judge me too hard, but they're comfortable and they work.
Yeah, and for anyone that is not, you know, able to see behind the scenes, when Trevor Scales comes to work to get ready to bring you guys Sports Nation or Sports Center on Snapchat, he treats it like game day going into the NBA Finals, where you see the walk in here. We do league fits all the time. Trev is notorious for walking around the ESPN's hallways with a bag with the box carrying the game day sneakers, the ones he will wear on air, and then having something that's going to be better for the elements, be able to take a beating the rest of this time. And so the Crocs
exactly right.
have now filled that role.
That's exactly
so.
Right.
All
right.
You know what? I have to, at some point, I think I'm going to have to take the plunge
take
here
the
and try and treat myself. We'll consult further on this matter in a little bit here. Chanel Angle Jr. on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. So we dealt with last week the news surrounding Sha'Carri Richardson testing positive for cannabinoids, you know, marijuana, for anyone that's not familiar with the term used on the banned substance list here. And so her entry to the Olympics in the 100-meter dash, the event that she had gone out and dominated in the qualifiers in Oregon, no longer there. But there was a hope that on the other side of the one-month suspension she received for that positive test, she would still, because of the time frame, be eligible to potentially compete in the 4x100-meter relay. You don't need to qualify for that one. USA Track and Field has a little more latitude there. So, Trev, how surprised were you when we got the news that USATF was not going to select or was not going to bring her to the Olympics as a part of this 4x1?
I don't know that surprise is the word that I would attribute, like, my feeling to. It was more a disappointment, certainly,
yep.
when I understood what the eligibility ramifications were. Like, I saw a window for USA Track and Field to do sort of a make-good, a stance that shows the public what we perceive this situation to be versus what WADA has already said what their hardline stance is. Because, again, you break a rule, there are ramifications.
Yep.
But USA Track and Field had an opportunity to say, okay.
The World Anti-Doping Agency, for anyone unfamiliar with the four letters.
Thank you for clarifying that. But, like, there was a chance for you to delineate yourselves from the World Anti-Doping Agency, and they didn't do that. And that was saddening in a sense, man, because I thought Sha'Carri deserved a chance to kind of at least get in on the back end.
And this was the interesting part to me, because we look at this and our natural reaction to this entire story has been the outrage machine. And,
right.
And parts of it are understandable because we look at this rule and say, yeah, pretty much every pro sports league that we have over here looks at marijuana and certainly doesn't think it's a performance enhancer, but doesn't even think it hurts enough to test for it now actively here. So our mindset on this is totally different. But when I saw this decision, I said, all right, this would have been an easy PR win for USA Track and Field to bring her along here. It would have been a big help because when you look at the nature of this race, she's the fastest girl that we have. Like, she is someone who this country, when we look at the future of these events, especially women's sprinting, she is the future. And so they no doubt hurt their chances to go over and compete at the highest level by not having her on this team. And so I'm looking at it from USA Track and Field standpoint and saying, all right, what's the win to go about it the way you did? And the only thing I can come up with is, one, there are other people involved in this. The other athletes that moved up a notch because Sha'Carri Richardson was taken out of that also have Olympic hopes and dreams that are tied up in all of this. But as much as anything, this is a reminder. It's the same version of the conversation we had last week where USA Track and Field, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, are a small part of a whole in this. Like, it's not just us, it's the rest of the world that we got to deal with here. And so for USA Track and Field, that's had some instances in the past with legitimate doping undermining its credibility and its place in the larger body of the sport. I thought that really shined through when we talked to Travis Tigert last week, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, about how they handle things and handle the idea of change in this particular venue versus the way they have to do it under the World Anti-Doping Agency. Here was Travis Tigert.
Absolutely, we're going to continue pushing. You know, we're in touch with the federal government. Our federal government has the seat at the World Anti-Doping Agency table. We don't. We have nothing other than our soft diplomacy and our voice in the newspapers. And we've supported over the years. And in fairness to WADA, they have come a long way from where they were and did that before any other organizations had done it. They still can go a little bit farther in our mind to potentially have a better solution.
Now, I only ask, what better way to institute a change than by intrinsically, in your own sort of space, making a new sort of record for, like, what we are going to adjudicate people by? Like, what are we going to sort of, where are we going to draw the line to show you that it is okay to draw the line here? I thought that was an easy opportunity to adjust everybody else's thinking.
Yeah, and that way, it almost, to me, feels like what we talked about last week with Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy, where the Heisman Trust came out and said, well, if the NCAA reinstates that season, we're happy to welcome him back in here. And I said, well, I have a lot of respect for the Heisman Trust, but why are they beholden to the NCAA? What stops them from setting the bar and saying, hey, we're going to give Reggie back his Heisman. The NCAA can do what they want, but we know they only govern so much in football. The only difference is here, I think USA Track and Field still does understand, hey, we've had instances in the past that maybe we're still trying to make sure perception-wise as a program we are overcoming on the world stage, because we've heard they've struggled to have the same seat at the table they've been used to in the past year. I'm trying to work hard to say, all right, there has to be some reason, because there are very few immediate wins for USA Track and Field itself based on this.
And look, that's, again, to rebut, once again, it's the educational opportunity that you then have if you were to take this stance. It is now, I am going to now steer the ship then, right? If you need an understanding as to why we're doing what we're doing, why we're letting this slide, and we understand that we should not have let Justin Gatlin slide. We should not have let the myriad of others, Marion Jones, either slide, right? We are going to sort of draw a line in the sand, but where we draw this line is going to be indicative of how we operate within this country, the rules and guidelines placed and laws placed upon the different substances that we're talking about, so that we can not go with the umbrella term and sort of parse out what is okay and what is not. I guess that's where I just push back a little bit.
Yeah, pushback has been the main part of this story. Well, I'm sure I'll have plenty more chances to talk about this as we get ready and get you headed up to the Olympics coming up later in July. But coming up next, we're talking about champions to be made in the NBA. Let's talk to someone who knows a thing or two about this final stage next here on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
There's only one proper way to respond on sports talk radio anytime there is a sporting event at the championship level.
Uh-huh.
We got to find someone to blame for stuff.
Yeah, without question. Yeah.
Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guest, join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Hoping to talk to Kyle Lowry here in a second. NBA champion, six-time NBA All-Star, Toronto Raptors legend, obviously.
Yes.
Philadelphia's very own, which means he fits in very well around this show. So hopefully we'll be able to get to talk to Kyle. He's out at the American Century Championships out in Tahoe right now. My buddy Kyle Rudolph's out there playing as well, other people. So it's one of those things, it feels like if you were, and you see this so often in football, I mean, you and I both know this, there's nothing football players love more than imagining what their life would have been like had they picked up clubs at an early age, right? Like, that's every football player's excuse is, man, I wish my dad had put some clubs in my hands when I was a kid. I wouldn't have to run into people like this. Listen, you're 300 pounds, sir. You were probably always going to do this.
We were
going to
avoid them clubs, regardless of whatever you thought was good for you. And the moment that validates that thought process is when you hit that one 300-yard drive that straight as an arrow that will never come to you for another round of golf that you play for that year.
Like, it's that the one drive that keeps you coming
yes,
back.
Yes.
Every time. I just need to birdie 17, and sure as the day is long, I will be back there next round to duff a couple right off that opening drive and make it happen here. That's honestly the best part. We talked about the match that went on yesterday, Trev. You had Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Bryson DeChambeau going out there, and it was a great event. They did it for charity, yep. Feeding America, all these great groups that they were helping out with yesterday. But that's one of the best parts about it is watching Tom Brady struggle at something. Because he lost again out there on the course. You saw him get so mad he was spiking clubs out there. And there is just a humbling moment for a sport that so many of us play in golf to say that guy's got so much going for him in life. But man, he can't beat any of these other rich celebrities in golf.
That's exactly. You just hold on to that one human element of Tom Brady. It's the one thing that we can say, I relate to you. Or maybe even, I might be better than you in something. And that is the one thing that you can kind of hold over his head.
Well, and this was a beautiful thing for Aaron Rodgers, because Tom had been needling Aaron. Like, we were all also selfishly watching the match yesterday, trying to see if Aaron Rodgers was going to give up any of the goods. And, like, we didn't expect it to, because Aaron Rodgers has been living very publicly during this time of turmoil for him and the Packers, so he's gotten used to giving non-answers. But you had Tom Brady needling him the other day in the promo thing, saying, what is a guy who has a problem with his coach and no options, Aaron Rodgers, in the Jeopardy format there? And so when Aaron Rodgers got pushed on it yesterday during the round, because the broadcast crew did have to do the journalism thing and ask him some football questions, you could see he was ready for it.
Packers, Bears, any idea who's going to be there? Anybody who's going to be quarterbacking in the number 12 jersey?
Yeah, I don't know, B.A. We'll see.
How about September 12th then? Will you go for that one?
What's that one?
That would be the opener against the Saints.
Oh.
All cheesers rejoice.
Yeah, I don't know, B.A. We'll see.
Okay.
You know you're a Milwaukee guy.
I know.
Aaron, everybody is on their toes. They want to know, man. They want to know.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm just having a good time out here with Tom. I'm trying to talk to him about it. If he's going to keep playing or not, you know?
Hey, Aaron, we go way back. You can just tell me. I'll keep it a secret. Hey, I promise I will not put it anywhere.
Charles, I'll tell you this week in Tahoe.
So there you go. Maybe we'll find out at the American Century Championships in Tahoe this week. Maybe that's where Aaron's truly going to do this, because, Trev, this seems like a guy that's just enjoying making the Packers sweat this out.
I mean, the idea that, like, I'm not all the way in on him not knowing what the dates on his schedule are just yet, but...
And that's worth noting, because we're getting up to that point. Like, we've largely ignored this story this summer because we've done so much of it early on, but we're only a few weeks now away from NFL training camps opening up. So has any part of your mind changed on Aaron Rodgers not suiting up for the Green Bay Packers? Where are you at on his status with the team this fall?
Dude, like, I remember Rob Domofsky, like, long before we even got fully into this. I think it was before the draft coverage that we did,
yeah,
where he said, like, there's a less than 5% chance he suits up for the Packers again. I'm going to trust the individual that's around that beat all the time. And it looks extremely bleak, not even on no, like, just pure animosity stuff, but he's just, like, over the situation, and everybody wants a fresh start. At least that's what the vibe that everybody's putting out at this point. So it feels as though we're getting ready to see a new sort of takeover, and I guess Jordan Love is the guy that we're going to ride out with when it comes to training camp, because he ain't going to be there, and week one, because it feels like he's just going to pull out of that situation entirely.
Yeah, I think this is the interesting part about all the silence makes me think, all right, we're running out of options steadily here, because making something happen this close to training camp seems like it would be cumbersome, not only for the Packers, but for whatever team Aaron Rodgers would potentially end up in, all of a sudden getting your new quarterback in the middle of training camp. So it looks to be either now Aaron Rodgers isn't going to play this upcoming season, or he's going to play with the Green Bay Packers. And I'm not ready to give up just yet, because I feel like every time with these stories, the minute things get quiet and I suddenly give up and say, oh yeah, he's going to be back in a Packers uniform, the next week a trade gets done here. So we haven't reached the Armageddon zero barrier yet for this. But we're getting closer and closer. Getting close. We're brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Unfortunately, couldn't get a hold of Kyle Lowry. But coming up next, we will head back to the final stage that he knows very well and try and figure out who's to blame already after game one of the NBA Classic. Finals. Next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.